And now it's time for the bullpen.
OMG, the bullpen.
It's the bullpen, everybody.
Mercy me, the bullpen.
Go team, go team.
Yes.
All right, welcome into the bullpen. We were gone last week. It was a bit crazy with all the dead week stuff and then finals this week. So we had a lot going on. We weren't able to find a time to record last week. So we apologize for that. But we're back.
We are back.
And possibly better than ever. That remains up for debate.
That remains to be seen.
Yeah, we will see how this goes. But I want to thank you guys for listening in. To get things going, it's almost bowl season, which is a terrible reminder about how badly our football team did this year.
Yeah.
Because we, for the first time in 5 years,
I think five years.
We are not going to a bowl game, which is sad.
And to put that in perspective, University of Texas at San Antonio, the Roadrunners do have a bowl game.
Yeah, the skinny Roadrunners have a bowl game and we do not. Yeah. But yeah, rough year, so hopefully we're able to bounce back and come back better. Come back better.
Hopefully.
And able to make it back to a bowl game next year. I think we kind of have to, or I think it should be Matt Wells' last year. I mean, I think we've talked about this on previous episodes where, you know, the Hartwell has come out and said that they will be retaining Coach Wells, but there will be changes made. So I'm assuming that assistants are getting fired.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's completely, I mean, yeah. I guess how I want to say this is I think that Coach Wells would deserve to be fired after how the program has gone down. However, as we've mentioned in previous episodes, I think that the biggest problem is money. Like, we can't financially afford to fire him and hire a new coach. And I think that that's the reason why he's getting another chance. And I hope that he makes the most of it. I hope he comes back and does a really good job, and we'll be glad that we didn't fire him. But hopefully, given the performance last year and this year, I don't see any reason why we should keep him, apart from the financial aspect. Because we only won 3 games this year, which is awful.
Terrible.
And if you include last year, after the Boise State game last year, pretty sure we are 5-17 or something since the Boise State game last year. I don't quote me on that statistic because I'm just guessing off of what I remember, but we have not done well since that game.
Well, especially after the expectations that were set after our first couple years in the Mountain West, where we were at least a decent team to contend for a division, to fall this far.
Yeah, I mean,
far,
we came really close to making it to the
And we were never totally out of the picture, and now we are out of the picture, obviously. So
big changes have to be made. I think that we got by a lot on the graces of our quarterback play, which was Chucky Keaton for a bit and then Daryl Garrettson when he was injured. But then even like last year, we started to see the wheels kind of come out from underneath of us. And I think that a big part of it is we don't have the right system, because, you know, the system that we're using may have been good for Chucky Keaton, but Kent Myers isn't Chucky Keaton, and then we don't have anyone that can come out and do the same stuff that Chucky Keaton was doing. And so it puts the players that do have to go out there, such as Kent Myers, at a disadvantage. And it makes it tougher for us to win games because we're relying so much on that position. And it was fine when we had someone who could do it, but when you don't, we need to make adjustments. And I like Kent Myers well enough. I think he had some struggles this year, but I think that he has not been put in the best position possible. And that's a big part of why I think Coach Wells needs to change things up. And I haven't heard any announcements about football coaches being fired already or anything like that, but I would expect that we get a new offensive coordinator and maybe some other position coaches, probably quarterback coach, because quarterback play again was not great this year. And again, I think part of that is just not putting our guy in the right situation. I mean, a perfect example of what you do when you don't have that superstar player that you're used to having is the Patriots. For the first 4 games of this year, You know, they Tom Brady was suspended, obviously, for Deflategate, which we're not going to get into. But then, you know, you come in, you have his backup, a guy who hasn't even played, you know, a meaningful down in the NFL yet. I'm blanking on his name right now.
Not Garoppolo?
Yeah, Garoppolo.
Garoppolo.
Yeah, Jimmy Garoppolo. He comes in and looks amazing. And then he ends up going down with an injury, and they put in the third string guy, a rookie, and he's not a great passer at this point. He needs to learn a lot, but he's very athletic, and so they were able to adjust. Belichick was able to adjust things, so they ended up going 3-1 in the first four games of the season, and that was without Tom Brady, who's one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time.
Well, I think it's because of all the other weapons they have. True. I mean, it's not.
Honestly, I don't think that they really have that great of weapons apart from Gronkowski, but he was out. But when your best receiver is Julian Edelman, who's a decent receiver, but he's not like a superstar, you know, it's obviously not just because of guys around the quarterback. You know, I think that, you know, Bill Belichick is the greatest coach in the NFL at this point. And he puts his guys in really good positions, and that's the mark of a good coach, is being able to put your guys in the best positions to succeed. And I don't think that we've done that here at Utah State, and I think that Matt Wells has to kind of look into doing something like that. You know, find who, like, the best ways to utilize guys, put them in the best position, and minimize their weaknesses, and then you'll have more success, I think. And I don't think he's adjusted his system at all to compensate for, you know, their strengths and the weaknesses of players. And I think that that's something that we desperately need to do. I mean, when you look at it, we had Devontae Mays, who unfortunately was injured for most of the year, but this guy is a powerful downhill running back, and he can kind of break away at times, but he's not like a speed back. And so you constantly are running everything out of shotgun in the spread formation. That doesn't put your running back at, you know, in the best position to succeed. You know, if you had someone like Reggie Bush, yeah, you probably would want to do that, so he has room to operate. Whereas Devontae Mays is the type of running back that you just run over top of people. And so why not get an I formation going and have him run downhill, take the handoff going almost full speed? And I think that we would have had a lot more success that way. And I think that we need to make adjustments such as that to our offensive scheme to better suit our players that we have. And I think that that's something that needs to be done this offseason. I don't know if that means that Luke Wells is gone and other offensive coaches are gone and they replace them with someone else. But they've got to do something different, obviously, because if they continue to try to do the same thing, they're going to get the same result. And it's insanity, which is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. That's insanity. And that's kind of where we've been for the last year and a half. So, I mean, it was working well before that, but we also had Chucky for some of those games early last year. And, you know, we don't have the same guys out there that can do the same things, and so we have to make adjustments. So that's kind of my take on that.
Cool. Well, a couple other news items to go over. I mean, other than not getting a bowl game, which I guess is kind of news. University of Minnesota football players end their boycott of the Holiday Bowl. 10 players on the University of Minnesota Golden Gophers had been suspended for sexual assault over sexual assault allegations. The players think that their teammates should have been reinstated after it found that no criminal activity had taken place, although it was found by the university that the 10 players had broken university rules. So the players will remain suspended, but University of Minnesota will face Washington State in the Holiday Bowl. They've decided to take the field. So,
I just think it's funny because they were only – how long were they boycotting it? Like 3 days?
Yeah, it was like we're not going to practice or play, and then
– And then they just up and they're like, okay, we're actually going to play. And, I mean, I'm all about due process, and don't just assume that someone's guilty because they've been accused of something, because – a decent amount of times it's nothing happened and you're ruining someone's thing. But at the same time, you know, having a boycott, that only lasts, like, yeah. I think less than a week.
Yeah, because
I don't remember exactly when they started it, but I feel like it was this week.
Yeah, because they had, depending on, they had, like, until Friday or Thursday at 5 p.m. to notify officials if they were going to play in the Holiday Bowl. So they had to make up their mind anyway, so I don't think it would have lasted more than a few days, depending on when they started. So it's interesting. They feel adamantly enough that their teammates are innocent, at least of criminal activity. So it remains to be seen. But the 10 players are still suspended, and so that'll be interesting. And then you'll like this. Tim Duncan getting his jersey number retired this Sunday.
Yeah.
One of the greats in...
One of the greats? You mean the great Tim Duncan.
One of the greats.
One of the great Tim Duncans.
I respect
Duncans.
Tim Duncan.
One of the great Tim Duncans? He is the great Tim Duncan.
One of the great players of recent memory. So,
well, all time, really.
Yeah. I mean, led one of the best... one of the
I mean, let's best look at it this way. Over his entire league. Career, the Spurs had over 50 wins.
Yeah.
His entire career. That's insane.
Multiple NBA championships.
Five of them.
Yeah.
He's got five NBA championships. His team has been over 50 wins every year that he was in the league. And just a very good player. He was still very effective even last year. You know, he obviously wasn't what he was, say, 5-10 years ago, but he still was an effective contributor. But he kind of passed off the mantle to Kawhi Leonard, who is a beast. And I'm super stoked to have him going forward. Yeah. I have his jersey.
Nice.
Yeah. I snuck into his house and stole it. No, not really.
His jersey, like his actual locker yes. room jersey, you went in there and got it.
Yes, I actually... No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to go and make up something else. No, I bought it, but... But yeah, so I mean, I'm super stoked about that. And it's funny because Tim Duncan's the kind of person who doesn't really want this to happen, really. I mean, he just wants to get it over with. He doesn't like the limelight.
Yeah.
And he was perfect for the Spurs organization because that's exactly how they are. It's just, you know, you are respectful. You don't need to go and make a scene all the time. You don't have to be like have the superstar mentality that you're just
a celebrity.
Well,
they never really had a player in the dynasty years like that either.
No, and it's partially because they would target players who didn't have egos, and they also had great leadership from Tim Duncan as well as other veterans, but also they have the best coach in the NBA, and in my opinion, the best coach of all time. Say what you will about Phil Jackson, I don't think he's really as good of a coach as Greg Popovich is. I'd say he's a good coach, but I don't think he's a great coach. He really benefited from having really good players all the time. You know, he only had success when he had Jordan and Kobe Bryant. Like, think of it that way. Like, with Popovich, yeah, I mean, he had Tim Duncan for many, many years. But at the same time, you see what he was able to do with all these other guys that were cast offs from other teams, such as Boris Diaw. Guy wasn't just on the street, and they signed him, and he was a key part of their last championship run. And it was just thing like that time after time, and he doesn't put up with the egos, and he makes sure that you're earning your pay and you're doing a good job. So Greg Popovich, great coach, and you know, he's I don't know. I love the Spurs because of everything that they embody, and it's great. And so yeah, Tim Duncan getting his jersey retired a lot faster than most places will retire jerseys. Like yeah. Most of them, they wait a couple of years.
Yeah, but with Tim Duncan, it's
inevitable.
So obvious.
I mean, he's obviously like the best player in the Spurs franchise history.
Yeah.
And it's just like they're doing it less than halfway through the year after he retired. So that'll tell you something about how important he was to the team and, you know, to the NBA. So cool. Great, great stuff from Tim Duncan.
Yeah. Lots of good news stuff, so.
Yeah. Anyway, we are going to now go into our Wall of Shame.
Wall of Shame.
Which, I'm just going to jump in here. I don't like our intro still, and we haven't made a new one. But for the Wall of Shame, I'm throwing in another college football player. This is Joe Mixon who is a running back for Oklahoma Sooners. And also Oklahoma, the university, was also going in the wall of shame. Because this is just beyond... No, we're talking about this later on. Never mind. Oh, sorry.
It's still in the wall of shame, but we will...
We'll explain why later, because we're going to talk about it in our main event. But Joe Mixon and Oklahoma Sooners are going in the wall of shame, and we will tell you why later. And then also, and we'll probably talk a little bit more about this in a minute too, but I might go off on a rant right now. Harry Douglas, wide receiver for the Tennessee Titans. Uh-oh. Absolute pathetic, pathetic football player. Now, I used
like stats wise or
no as a football player, not for statistical or anything like that. I think he does a decent job statistically speaking, but he's a terrible, terrible football player for what he did against the Broncos on Sunday. So hopefully you've already seen the video, but if you haven't, what happened was, you know, the Titans were running the ball kind of to their right, and Chris Harris Jr. was covering Harry Douglas, and they were away from the play, and the play was about to be over, and Harry Douglas right there and Chris Harris Jr., they're completely away from the play, and Harry Douglas out of nowhere decides to dive with his helmet into the knee of Chris Harris Jr., which is beyond pathetic, because you're purposely attacking someone's knee to try to injure them. And he said he wasn't going for that, but what other reason would you have for doing that? You're not by the play. You're not helping out the play. It's not a cut block because, you know, A, wide receivers don't cut block. They don't take out your legs. They always block up high with the cornerbacks. There's kind of that understanding between receivers and cornerbacks, and I guess all defensive backs, that you know, it's blocking up high and stuff. And they usually, the receivers do a pretty good job. But they're going along, and you could just tell watching it that Chris Harris Jr. was looking off at the play away from it and stuff. And Harry Douglas looks up and sees he's not paying attention and dives with his helmet into Chris Harris's knee. And he left the game. And he came back. Luckily, he wasn't injured. He came back either the next play or the play after that. There was one play he was out. But it's just beyond pathetic. Like, that's totally unacceptable. You can't, in good conscience, think that that's an okay thing to do. And he afterwards was like, oh, I wasn't trying to injure him. I was just blocking him. It's like, no, that's complete bull.
Don't think you have to dive to block somebody.
No, and like, yeah, running backs will do cut blocks and stuff, but you expect it. And, like, it's actually usually relevant to what's going on with the play. This was completely the other side of the field, away from everything, and he just dives at Chris Harris's knee. Well, I was happy about this, and some people thought it was dumb, but the next play, Aqib Talib was covering Harry Douglas, and I think it was another running play. But Talib kind of got into it with Harry Douglas, and they were fighting on the sideline, which was great. He was sticking up for his teammate, and you know, Harry Douglas deserved a lot more than that. I think they should have gotten suspended and fined, but I don't think either has happened, which is beyond pathetic from the NFL. But yeah, he went after him, and I thought it was appropriate. We got a 15-yard penalty, but oh well. And you can't do that.
Well, cheap, you gotta crap. Stick up. You gotta stick up for your teammates, especially with a cheap shot like that.
Yeah.
You know.
And the thing about it is, Harry Douglas was not even a factor the entire game. He didn't catch a single pass. You know, he didn't do anything apart from go after Chris Harris's knee. By the way, Chris Harris, he ended up missing. You know, he went out for the season during the season. He tore his ACL on one of his things a couple years ago. So it's something that could have happened again. They could have torn his ACL by doing that. But it's just pathetic in my mind. Anyway, your turn.
You go. Okay. One of the entries I've got for the Wall of Shame, Las Vegas Golden Knights, the newest NHL franchise, have, I think, set the bar for quickest intersection of sports and legal troubles. The Golden Knights, without having played a single game in the National Hockey League, were taken to court over trademark of the Golden Knights name, which is currently...
UCF.
Well, there's also... It was another college up in New York that had the same name that was the one that took the Las Vegas team to court. So... haven't even played a game, haven't been on the ice at all, and they are already in legal trouble with their name. So, wall of shame for quickest trip to the courtroom by a professional team. So, other than the fact that Golden Knights is one of the most generic, in my mind, mascot or team names.
Why Golden? Why not just Knights?
Las Vegas. I don't know.
Las Vegas Knights? I mean, wouldn't that be kind of cool?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Golden Knights are just trying too hard.
Yeah, it is. I think that anytime you throw like a color on something is kind of dumb.
I mean, like
take Minnesota we were talking about earlier, the Golden Gophers. What?
Aside from the gopher itself not being a very super intimidating animal in its own right. Yeah, no, I mean, as we've talked about before on the show, I was not in favor of a team for Las Vegas for a variety number of reasons, one of them being that there's better hockey cities elsewhere in North America. It was a money thing, but you got to do your homework on your team names these days. With all the colleges out there, all the minor leagues around, you got to find.
Just try filing for a trademark, and if someone already has that trademark, maybe try something different.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. It's not even really.
I think they should have just gone with Knights.
Yeah, or at least something that's Las Vegas related.
Well, Las Vegas Knights. Think of it.
The Knights? I mean, well.
Think of it as like kind of a pun.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
That makes kind of sense.
Yeah.
So.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Knights is in like day night.
Yeah.
But obviously you would still have like actual Knights as in medieval times. But plus if you say it like it's kind of a play on it.
I don't like their logo.
It's very simplistic. Not saying it's the best option. I'm just saying they could switch to that.
I'm saying they didn't.
No one can really trademark Knights because it's
That's too common. That
But when you put the qualifiers, maybe they could be Black Knights.
The Black Knights.
Except then the people would think that was about race and not because their armor or something like that. Yeah. So I mean, if you did White Knights, it would be even worse. but yeah, so I mean, just stupid stuff like
so
that.
They have really raised the bar with professional sports legal issues. Not even played a single preseason game, not even taken the ice. I don't even think they have a roster. Well, I think they have a roster, a preliminary roster, but so that is one of the entries from me into the Wall of Shame. So do we have anything... Do you have any more?
That's it. Yeah.
All right. Well, I've got another one. I think we're all getting too much in baseball. We're all getting a little too crazy on the closer train this year with kind of the money that's being thrown around for some closers.
Well, I'm glad that the Dodgers kept Kenley Jansen.
Well, yeah. I mean, you want a good closer and a great closer.
And I was worried he was going to leave because he got a huge offer from someone. I don't even remember who it was. But then I saw that he re-signed with the Dodgers for probably, I think, the same amount. And I was like, yes, good, because we can't afford to take steps backwards.
Yeah.
Like the Cubs.
Hey, they got Danny Duffy. I will take Danny Duffy any day.
I still have no idea who that is.
He's got one of the best closer ERAs in the league.
That's what you say. I haven't heard of him.
That's what it is. You just got to look up Danny Duffy. But I don't know. I just think – I can't remember who it was, but somebody got a contract worth more than Mariano Rivera made his entire career. And I was like, that's a lot of money. I mean, sure, you want a good closer to seal the deal, but I just don't – I think we're getting a little too much on the crazy train when it comes to closers. I mean, it was like that – I don't know. It was kind of like that with when the Royals won their World Series and all of a sudden everybody – it was like relief and bullpen mania was going on. So, I'm not buying the whole closer mania. We got Chapman back on the Yankees now, but He was good, but he had some control issues, and that's a lot of money for a guy who's either really good or not there, you know?
Really good or
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I thought it was funny because he just, like, he goes back to the team that traded him away. Yeah. It's like, really?
I mean
because he wanted the most money, and I think he was probably more comfortable there.
Well, I also think there was some issues with the way Madden used him in the postseason, because Chapman complained about being overused, and I kind of agree with him that he really shouldn't have been coming in like, early eighth inning at all. But so, I don't know. I think they're – teams are shelling out a lot of money for a closer who is really there for one inning.
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah, he has an important role, but I just think I'd rather have solid starters and
good bullpen.
Because Hector Rondon was doing well for the Cubs as a reliever before Chapman came along. I think Chapman was important, but I don't know. The wall of shame is this closer mania.
Just a quick note on that is that's the thing about Chapman was that was the reason I thought that the Cubs were going to lose to the Dodgers is because Chapman can't handle throwing more than
one
inning.
Well, that's why he can throw 100 miles an hour from pitches in a row because he only thinks he's going in for one inning. So he can give it everything.
But he doesn't get or know how to throw for two.
Or coming in with runners on base was difficult for him too, which I think.
What do you want?
We're over specializing at that point because I get it. There's an important place for closers in the game, but if you got guys who are only trained to come in when there's nobody on base already, they fall under pressure. And he's the one that gave up those runs in Game 7 against Cleveland. I mean, granted, he came in a bad spot, but.
And he ended up turning around and getting them out before too much damage.
Yeah, and technically he got the win statistically, but I don't know. I think there's over-specialization. And if you're not able to come in and pitch with guys already on base.
To me, it's a complete prima donna thing. Like, just pathetic that you've got these athletes that think, oh, I need to be in just these specific situations. Yeah. I need you to carry me across the floor. I need you to carry my dog. I need you to do all this for me. It's kind of along the same lines as you got just way too high maintenance, and I didn't blame the Cubs at all for letting him go because
that's too much.
I honestly thought he was overrated watching him in the playoffs. So, yeah. I mean, I thought he was overrated. I was really glad that they brought Kenley Jansen back because I think he's a better closer than, almost anyone. I mean, there's probably a couple that are better than him, but he's definitely up there in the discussion. And he goes out and he can throw two innings. He can throw probably three if he needed to. I mean, he's a really solid guy, and he's not just I need to be in the one inning with no runners on.
Yeah, I think if you're going to play at the major league level, you should be able to pitch in more than just a few select situations. Even if you're really good at one particular thing, you should at least be competent enough. I mean, I don't know. I go back to, and it's why I really respect Mariano Rivera when he played, because the guy got the job done. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, you know, he made less money over his entire career than some of these closers are getting now in one contract. So, I don't know. Props to the Sandman for being really what closers should be, in my opinion. But
yeah, I mean, it really should be that way. And I think that's part of why. I mean, that's part of why I don't think Aroldis Chapman will ever amount to anything historical, because I just don't think that he has the mindset to allow himself to achieve greatness.
Yeah, I think the speed is great.
Speed's great. He's a good pitcher.
When he's off, it's horrendous. It's
bad. Yeah.
Especially with, I don't know, especially being a Cubs fan and you know something was going to screw up. That's the worst possible thing. I was
panic
like, here it is. Here
panic
it is.
Set in real quick for Evan.
I was about to be a minor league
pack
baseball
of frauds,
only
trade
guy.
Them all.
Yes, I was about to.
Dude, get over the World Series.
I'm never getting over the World Series. But yeah, so.
That's so much fun. But yeah, so that's the wall of shame.
Oh, yeah.
Ready or not, here comes the main event.
It's go time.
All right, as we mentioned earlier, we're going to be talking about Joe Mixon and the Oklahoma Sooners. So, if you haven't seen this video, it was released this week, but it was running back Joe Mixon from the Oklahoma Sooners. From back in 2014, he punched a female student. It is beyond ridiculous, yeah. First of all. Like, I have no tolerance for anyone hitting a woman. Unless there's one exception to that, and that's if she's trying to kill you and you have to sustain her. But even besides that, I think that you could probably avoid it. Yeah. Like, here's the thing. As much as feminists want to pretend like women and men are equal, they are not. You know, they're different. You know, as far as rights, yeah, definitely everyone, like, we should have equal rights for both sides. And I don't really see that as a problem at this point in our country. That is a problem in other places, but that's a political thing and not going to dive into that here. However, women are not as strong as men. You know, there are a couple exceptions where there are going to be some women that are stronger than some men. But overall, except for those few circumstances, men are much stronger than women. And especially if you're talking about a college football player.
Yeah.
You mean, obviously, he's going to be having to lift weights and all that.
He's stronger than most men.
Yeah.
The average man. Yeah.
And that's the thing. Is like, he's already stronger and all that. Like, if there's an issue, okay, in this video, we'll just talk about this. They're at some,
cafeteria or something.
Yeah, it looks like a cafeteria.
The OU campus.
Yeah, and anyway, so something that goes on, he doesn't have audio or anything, but this girl ends up pushing Joe Mixon, and he flat out throws a haymaker and drops her. And she fractured some bones in her face.
Jeez.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, yeah, she pushed him, but that does not mean that you can punch her. If she's like, attacking you, just wrap her up and don't let her hit you. Like, you don't have to hit her back to stop her from hitting you. And it's completely cowardly to hit a woman. You know, the only exception in my mind is if you're at war and you have a woman fighting you. Like, in that case, I don't have a problem with it because, you know, you're defending your life or other people's lives or whatever. But apart from that, I don't think there's many, many instances where you could ever justify that. And it's something that is going to be touted out as, you know, something that's commonplace now. Because Oklahoma has obviously reinstated him to the team this year. And this video came out just barely, so it's not like everyone has known about it, but you've got to think that the university has known about it and that they still have reinstated him to the football team. And that's pathetic. You can't put someone back on there. You remember Ray Rice completely dropped his then girlfriend or fiance, I don't remember which, but she got married to him, which I don't understand. But anyway, he drops her in an elevator, and he hasn't been able to find a job since in the NFL. And that's kind of how it should be. We should never condone this kind of action. And I'm all for second chances with a few exceptions. You know, if you kill someone, like, if it's by accident, then, you know, you'd have to look into the individual circumstances. But if it was murder, then there's no way you should get a second chance for that. And then also situations like this, you shouldn't get a second chance for that. And at least in football, like, you don't get to let him represent your university. I mean, after something like this happened. And he said that, you know, there were racial slurs being thrown around. You know, the girl denied it. And I'm inclined to believe that that didn't actually happen. But we're at this point where you can say anything, like, something offended you. And that'll justify your actions, but that's not true. You can't just justify your actions because even if your feelings are hurt. If someone's throwing out a racial slur, yeah, that's terrible. That shouldn't happen. But you can't use that to justify attacking someone and punching a woman. You can't use that as justification. You can be upset, but you can't pretend like you are exempt from being offended by anything. Again, racial slurs aren't okay. You know, you shouldn't, like, no one should condone them. But at the same time, you can't pretend like you have the right to not hear stuff you don't like.
Yeah, I am curious, having seen that video, I'm curious as to what happened, because she, like, gets up and pushes him and confronts him. So something happened, obviously. But yeah, I don't know about the racial slurs. I mean, I just don't think I see that on college campuses, that kind of language usually on college campuses. But yeah, I think there's a problem, especially when, you know, high profile athletes and then violence against women. Because, you know, it's not, I mean, you mentioned Ray Rice, even Aroldis Chapman, right at the end of his time with the Yankees, got in trouble for under the MLB's domestic violence rules regarding his girlfriend. Yeah, and so I think a lot of times there's this perception that if you're a high-profile athlete, or at least if you're an athlete on a high-profile team like the University of Oklahoma football, that you will get an easier time when confronted by the legal process after an incident like this. And I think it is a little weird that they're reinstating him.
They did reinstate him. They suspended him for at least part of last year or the year before. I don't remember which. But they reinstated him afterwards. He's been playing all year.
Yeah.
And he apparently apologized a month or so ago. But to me, I don't think that's enough. I don't think that you get to come back and keep pretending like you're a model. I mean, that's part of, whether you want to admit it or not, as a student athlete, you are representing the university, and you are supposed to set, you know, a model for the university. And if you're going to be the kind of person that will punch a woman because you're upset about something, that doesn't make the university look better. And that's why I put Oklahoma in the wall of shame, because they reinstated him and they're letting him be a representative for their university. And to me, he's not the kind of representative that you want. There's no place for that.
Yeah, and I think, well, especially in the case of University of Oklahoma, because the Sooner football team is just so important to that school. I mean, when you think of Oklahoma, you think of their football program, you know, out of all their sports. So I think it's part of just because of how significant that team is to the university, too. As what that goes into why they maybe brought him back. I'm not sure if they should have brought him back. I mean, I don't know what he's done. I mean, you mentioned he said he apologized or something. I don't know if he's, I don't know what, if they do anger management or whatever over there, but yeah, it's a little concerning, especially just going back to the video, the way the confrontation happened, because clearly something was going on before. This wasn't a random act of violence. I mean, you should never hit a woman, obviously, but I think something must have happened. Not that that justifies anything, but something. If that girl got up, you know, something serious was going on, I think. So,
I just don't see any place for him to be on the team after something like that.
Yeah.
And
any other school, that might be the case.
Maybe.
Except for with the Sooners.
But, you know? But the thing about it, though, And I think that they probably would have similar stuff other places, but it would depend school to school and who's in charge. But the thing about it is, like, you've got other guys that are there to step up to take that place.
Oh,
you know, you got other really good recruits that are waiting for a chance, and maybe they're not quite as good, but, you know, I think that you miss out on your chance, like, when you do something like this.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's kind of my take on it.
Yeah.
Feel free to let us know how you feel about it or about anything that we've talked about. You can tweet us at USU Bullpen or me at EthanChadwick15 and Evan at EvanHall62. But yeah, we're going to jump in for a second to talk about our NFL picks,
which we struggled with.
What are our current tallies again, Evan?
So the last.
And by the way, we've missed 2 weeks because just miscommunications.
Yeah. So last time we got it was week 13. You did a bit better. I didn't do so hot. But now, so week 13 plus the Thursday game with the Chiefs and Raiders, and then this past Thursday. I am at 83 wins and 68 losses, two ties. And you're at 84 wins, 67 losses, and two ties. So a game apart now.
And so. I guess I'll open this up to you, but I feel like we're terrible at picking these. And I don't know. Do you want to pick these last 2 weeks?
I don't know. I think when it comes to being terrible at picking, I think that because there's a few teams that for some weird reason this universe has decided every time I pick them, they're gonna
do the opposite.
Yeah. And I don't know. I just think somehow we've kind of like evened out over the
Well, of course, because of the lines and all that. For Thanksgiving week when we didn't do a show,
yeah.
I sent my picks to Evan, but Evan didn't do his picks, so we didn't get to count them. And I only missed like two games that week. So like the 1 week I did like super awesome, we don't even count.
Well,
it's a bit upsetting, Evan. It's a bit upsetting.
Yeah.
But I guess, yeah, we'll just go with it. So this week, we have the first Saturday game that we're going to have for a while. I guess we'll mention on Thursday night, the Seahawks were 13.5-point favorites. And I thought the Rams would be closer than that. I didn't think they would win. But for some reason, teams usually play better the week after their coach gets fired. This week, not so much. They lost 24-3. And I picked the Rams, and Evan picked the Seahawks.
Yeah, I just thought Seahawks are at home.
Yeah, I mean, I expected the Seahawks to win, but I thought Rams would make it close. But apparently not. So I don't know if I can pick them again. I guess it depends on how big the spread is. So on Saturday, we have our first Saturday game of the year that's not a preseason game. And this is going to be the Jets hosting the Dolphins. The Dolphins are 2.5-point favorites.
Yeah, I think Miami. I'm going to pick Miami just because the Jets are so awful.
The Jets are pretty bad, that is for sure. Part of me wants to pick the Jets. I kind of feel like they might win or at least have it be a 1-point game. But I will also have to go with the Dolphins to be safe. I think it's a better pick. I want the Dolphins to lose so that the Broncos don't. I can have a better chance to still make it into the playoffs. But, yeah. Then we got the Patriots and the Broncos are playing. Broncos are at home, but the Patriots are 3-point favorites. And I'm fan-picking the crap out of this and going with the Broncos. I think they win.
To be opposite, I'm going to go with New England.
Yeah. So. It's not – I mean, I think that it's not a safe pick either way because – you know, you got a couple different things going on. You have the Broncos, whose offense has had struggles because the offensive line is so terrible, and I don't think they're aggressive enough on offense. I think they have some of the same problems that our offense had for Utah State. And on the other side, you got the Patriots, who are a really good team at 11-2. But at the same time, the Broncos win at home all the time against the Patriots. And Tom Brady has a winning record against every team in the NFL except the Broncos. So, on top of that, I'm also a Broncos fan, and so I have to pick them. And they're not in a position where I think that they'll lose games, per se. Yeah. So, I can get away with that. You can't so much because your team's not very good. But, yeah, I'm going with the Broncos. Switching up, go to Chicago, your team. The Bears are hosting the Packers. Packers are 5.5-point favorites.
I'm just going to fan pick it. Going to go for Chicago.
You know, I'm tempted to go with you on that one.
Really?
Yeah, because I don't really believe in the Packers. I think that they find ways to lose. The Bears already beat them once this year, didn't they?
Yeah, at Lambeau.
Yeah, so part of me wants to do it, but the Packers have been playing better lately. I'm going to have to go with the Packers, especially since the Bears are not good. Texans host the Jaguars. The Texans are 5-point favorites.
I'm going to pick Houston. It's at home and it's against the Jaguars. So
yeah, I'm going to go with the Jaguars, and I'll explain why. Because the Jaguars aren't a very good team, obviously. However, they do have a good secondary. And Osweiler is not a great passer. And I feel like he's going to throw a couple of picks, and maybe one goes back to the house. And the Texans are not really a good team. They're not. And so I kind of think that the Jaguars will manage to either win this one or at least have it be close, closer than five. So that's why I'm picking that. And I may regret it later, but
go for it.
The Browns travel to Buffalo to take on the Bills, who are 10-point favorites.
Only 10-point favorites? Oh, well, Browns have been close in a few games. I think the Browns get within 10. I don't think they win, but I don't think they'll lose by more than 10 either. So, going to go with Cleveland.
Yeah. I'm kind of torn on this. Do you remember if Rex Ryan got fired last week?
I didn't hear about it.
Because there was reports that he might get fired as soon as Monday. I don't remember actually seeing it, so I don't think it happened yet.
I think we would have noticed that if he got...
I'm going to go with you. I think that the Browns are closer than 10 points. Because this Bills team is not very good, and the Browns have done a decent job of playing close in a lot of games, even though they can't win. Poor guys. Then the Ravens host the Eagles as 5.5-point favorites.
I'm going to go with Baltimore on this one.
I am as well. They're kind of rolling at this point, and the Eagles are in a tailspin. So... Not a great pick on them. Chiefs and the Titans face each other in Kansas City. Kansas City is a 5.5-point favorite.
Oh, I think Chiefs win this one. It's at home in a very loud Arrowhead Stadium. They have the chance to take the AFC West with a win. I just think the atmosphere is going to be absolutely nuts at Arrowhead, so I'm giving it to the Chiefs.
I'm almost inclined to agree with you on that one. Part of me thinks that the Titans are going to win this one because they – or at least have it close. I feel like this is going to be a low-scoring game. However, I do believe that the Chiefs will win this one and win by more than 5.5, so I'll pick them as well.
It's pretty much like one touchdown.
And I think that it might be closer than that. I'll regret not going with my gut on that one, but I'm going to go with the Chiefs because I think they're a really good team.
In a good division.
Yeah, sure. In the best division. Yeah. And, yeah, so I think they're a really good team. They're good on both sides of the ball, and Alex Smith is way underrated as a quarterback. The Giants host the Lions as 4-point favorites.
Lions also a team that is hunting for a division, and I think this is just the time of the year where I think they're going to be really pumped and ready to go as well. So I think Detroit wins that. Not only beats the line, but I think they win the game too.
See, there's a interesting thing is both of these teams aren't very good at running the ball, but they've both done pretty well with passing. However, I think that Eli makes a couple mistakes, and I think that the Lions win. Vikings host the Colts. They are 4-point favorites.
Yeah, I think Vikings win just because how bad the Colts have been. So I'm going to give it to the Vikings.
This one's kind of interesting because Adrian Peterson was taken off the injured reserve list this week. He will play on Sunday. However, you don't know how much he's going to play. If he is able to come in and get a significant contribution this week, then it's going to be a pretty good game for them, I think. At the same time, I have a hard time betting against Andrew Luck because he's so good, and they're going to be indoors, even though it's in Minnesota. And Minnesota has not done well since they started out like 5-0.
That is true.
2-6 since then. So I'm kind of torn on this. I'm going to go with the Colts. Either they have it closer than 4 points or they win. Bengals host the Steelers. The Steelers are 3-point favorites.
I'm going to go with the Steelers. I think with Roethlisberger out there, if he's healthy enough now by this point to play,
to me, it's not really about Roethlisberger in this game. I do think that the Steelers went, or I'm picking the Steelers as well, but I'm picking them because of Le'Veon Bell. The guy's been absolutely insane the last couple weeks. I mean, last week he ran for over 200 yards and had 3 touchdowns. He just went off, and I think that he's going to continue to do his thing. So we'll see how that goes. I kind of hope that he doesn't do his thing, because I'm going against him in a fantasy football league, so I don't really want him to go off, but I'm not going to be surprised if he does. The Cardinals host the Saints. Arizona's a 3-point favorite.
Every time I pick the Cardinals, they disappoint. So I'm going to give it to New Orleans.
Well, then I'm going to go with the Cardinals. Because every time you pick them, you get it wrong every time. So I'm going with it. No, this should be a good game. It should be a high scoring game. You never really know what you're going to get with the Cardinals. They'll show up some weeks and they won't others. So I guess we'll have to wait and see how that one goes. Next up, we have the Falcons hosting the 49ers. They're 13.5 point favorites.
See, the last 13.5 line we had on Thursday, it ended up being true. But that is a big gap they're predicting. See, Falcons, Matt Ryan's been good passing, and the 49ers are just awful. But 13.5, though, do I like that?
I'm going with it. The 49ers are terrible.
Well, they are.
And the Falcons have a pretty good offense. And their defense is pretty good as well. So yeah. I'm definitely going with the Falcons on this one.
Yeah, I'll probably go with Atlanta.
I probably should have waited for you to convince yourself to pick the 49ers on that so that I could get
that
win.
But the thing is, but it is the 49ers, though. That's the problem. Because yes. It's like I want to say a 13.5 difference. I don't think so. But it is San Francisco.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The last afternoon game is the Chargers hosting the Raiders. Oakland is a 3-point favorite.
Only 3 points? Because Raiders are going to win this. I think they still want – they're still in the running for a division, depending on how the Chiefs do. So I think they're really going to bring their top game, even if it is in San Diego, and I think – the Raiders win this one by more than 3.
Yeah, I'm going to go with you as well. I'm not surprised the line is 3 because I think the Chargers always play tough against their division opponents. And I think that this will be a close game, but I think that the Raiders can win by at least 4. So I think it'll be a fight. And I actually wouldn't be surprised if the Chargers won. But I'm not going to expect it, you know. Cowboys host the Buccaneers on Sunday night. Dallas is a 7-point favorite.
Funny thing about the Cowboys, when they lost last week, finally lost. Everybody just seemed to forget that. Just stopped remembering that how good Dak Prescott has been and how good their whole team.
That's because Dak Prescott has not been good the last few weeks.
True, but I still think even him not being as great, they're still fantastic. I'm going to give it to Dallas. I think they win it by more than 7.
I'm going to go with the Buccaneers.
Really?
I say that they win. I think that the Buccaneers will do enough defensively to kind of stymie the offense of the Cowboys. I mean, here's the thing. Dak Prescott has done a good job for a rookie and for even just a starting quarterback this year. But he has not been able to throw it down the field very well, and definitely not the last few games. He's been kind of awful. And he's really struggled the last few games, and I think defenses are kind of figuring out how to play him, and he's not been able to have the openings that he was having earlier in the season. So I honestly, you know, this is something I was talking about at work last week before both the Raiders and the Cowboys lost last week, and I said that neither one of them is going to win the Super Bowl this year. And I wouldn't be surprised if neither one of them made it to the Super Bowl this year, because I think that they're both young cores, and they – don't have enough veteran presence, you know, in their offenses to kind of get over that. And so I'm going to go ahead and say that right now. I don't think either of them is going to make it to the, or is going to win the Super Bowl. And obviously, I don't think both of them would make it to the Super Bowl, because then my pick would not really work. But yeah, so I think that the Buccaneers will find a way to beat the Cowboys. They're hot. The Cowboys stumbling a little bit. They're kind of slowing down. They're losing momentum. And I'm going to pick the Buccaneers to either be closer than 7 or they win the game. Last up, Monday night, we got the Redskins hosting the Panthers. The Redskins are 6.5-point favorites.
I'll give it to Washington. I think that they win by a touchdown. I think it's going to be just over that line.
This team is Jekyll and Hyde. They'll show up for games and they won't. I mean, this is the story of a lot of teams this year for some reason. The Panthers are another one. They'll show up really well some games and they won't other games. However, I'm going to pick them to show up in this game. I think the Panthers win. So, yeah, that is it for today. We want to thank you guys for listening. Hit us up at USU Bullpen, at Ethan Chadwick 15, at Evan Hall 62. And have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week, most likely.
This has been another edition of the Bullpen Podcast on Aggie Radio.
Catch us on aggieradio.com and on Twitter at USU Bullpen.